FAA's Randy Babbitt on aviation as an underpinning for the nation's economy. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for the download. Today, we're bringing you part two of Randy Babbitt's recent remarks to attendees at the 2010 AEA International Convention and Trade Show in Orlando. We'll pick up the presentation today with Babbitt's assessment of the overall value of aviation to the U.S. economy.
This industry isn't just a little add-on to this nation's economy. This industry is 5.6% of this nation's GDP. Every day, every single day, while we're in here today, we're going to carry 2 million people, we're going to run 50,000 flights, and we're going to do it safely. And that goes on every day. This is a huge component of this economy. We employ, through the other components, direct and indirect, we employ 12 million people in this country with this industry. So it's very important that we do it, and we do it right, and we do it that it's scalable and workable into the future. So yes, we all have a big investment in GPS, and we all have a big investment in ADS-B, and the components that that brings us all put together under the umbrella of NextGen. So it's something that I would ask that we work together to make certain, so that when somebody says to you, so what is NextGen and why is it important? You at least have the 30-minute or 30-second elevator speech in the back of your mind to explain to them what it does. A couple of facts that I like to throw out, just the in-route advantage alone. This industry, large commercial aircraft in this country are going to burn somewhere between 18 and 19 billion gallons of fuel this year. We can save them 5%. In a fully integrated next-gen system, en route alone, I'm not talking about engine technology, I'm not talking about wing technology, I'm not talking about composite structures, I'm talking about en route procedures only, will save 5%. That's almost a billion gallons of kerosene. And at today's prices, at $2 a gallon alone, and we should hope that it could stay at $2 a gallon, but that's $2 billion a year. Who wouldn't invest? If I told you you had something that you could put in your car and it would cost you X amount of money, but you'd have it all back in 3 years, of course you'd put it in. What company wouldn't? So these are the types of things we need to make people aware of, even people that don't fly. The couple that lives 7 miles from the airport and hadn't been in an airplane in 10 years, they still get those packages through eBay and Amazon. And that 100 pounds of carbon per arrival that we're not going to rain on them because we have a better approach procedure is something they should be aware of. So we're not wasting money just on commercial airliners. Every citizen of this country will take advantage from this. Let me shift gears for, if I could. I want to talk, I've been fairly vocal about professionalism and safety and where we go. The safety is the number one priority of the FAA, and we're fortunate that almost without exception, everybody in this business sees safety as a key component of what they do, and they see the key to that is professionalism. People ask me to define, what is, when you say professionalism, what do you mean by that? I think the simple sentence explanation is we want people to do the right thing at the right time, and knowing when to do that and when not to do it is key. But I think the comma and then the last sentence is when no one else is looking. It's pretty easy for pilots. How did they do on their last check ride? Oh, they were really good. I'm not worried about what they do on their check rides. I'm worried about what they do when they're not on a check ride. I'm worried about what people do when there isn't a supervisor mechanic watching them and signing them off. I'm worried about when there isn't an inspector in the shop watching what goes on. Our concern is doing the right thing when you're not being watched and knowing it. And we also want to create a system. We talk about safety management and we talk about safety management systems. We talk about, that's really good. Delta Airlines should have one of those, and so should United, and so should some of these big overhaul shops. Well, I would make the case here that everybody needs a safety management system. It's very scalable, and when you think about what a safety management system is, it's simply a way, and you'll certainly, I think you even got on your agenda here, you're going to walk through the pillars and the just culture and the various components. But in simplest of terms, safety management lets everybody know that safety is a focus, and it's a way to report safety, and it's a way to admit when things aren't being done safely, and those admissions come without retribution. When somebody makes a mistake and nobody's looking, they tried to do the right thing, but they saw something go wrong, you and I want them to put their hand up and say, hey, I made a mistake. This procedure wasn't clear to me, and I did this wrong. Now, absent that type of a feedback mechanism, we're never going to know about it, and we're never going to fix it. I have an old adage a lot of pilots have, nobody ever landed with the gear up twice, I hope. And there's a lot of red covers on switches in airplanes, and they didn't come out of the shop that way. Those switches got covered later. People were flipping them at the wrong time. The switch was put in the wrong place. So the easiest thing to do is just cover it up, make you think about what you did before. That was actually a safety management innovation. So we find out things that go wrong. We put a prescriptive cure in so that it doesn't go wrong again. But we find it out because somebody told us about it. And that's key. That's what the essence of a safety management system is.
In a moment, Randy Babbitt addresses those who say some businesses are too small to need safety management systems. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. We're listening to part two of three of FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt's comments to attendees at the recent AEA convention in Orlando. He's brought up SMS, but what does that mean for small repair shops or fleets?
The other thing I want to emphasize is that these safety management type systems, they are in fact scalable. And I wouldn't want anybody to think that, well, you know, we're just too small. We don't need to have a safety management system. Well, think about cockpit resource management. Think about maintenance resource management. We're talking about an environment of sometimes two or three people. And yet we train people how to operate in that environment. It doesn't get much less scalable than two people. It's like FOQA, you know, when you only have one airplane in the fleet. They said, well, we don't have FOQA. You do have FOQA. It's called a logbook. You can look in the logbook and see the data. If you have a lot of airplanes, you need something more sophisticated in the logbook. So don't let anyone convince you that you shouldn't have a safety management system or embrace the concepts of it because you're too small. Quite the contrary. We have safety management systems we're developing in the air traffic organizations where sometimes there's only two or three people in a facility. And it can be as simple as a legal pad where we've jotted down things. We think about a lot of things and we don't necessarily translate them and say, well, that's a safety management system. I think everybody in the room probably has a checking account. Do you just write the checks and then never see what happened to them? And did you ever think that maybe you wrote the wrong number in the register so you balance the checkbook occasionally? That's a safety management system. Did the bank take the same amount of money that you wrote the check for? Well, there's a way to find out. They send you a ledger and you cross-check it. When we have events and we took action to them, did they get implemented? Did it happen again? That's a safety management system. They're not necessarily as complex. And that's the point I want to make to let you know in terms of what we try to do with a safety management system. And, of course, the result is the loop of feedback so that we know that those things that have been put before us and changed have been implemented. They have been adopted, and we have created that vehicle. Interestingly enough, when we watch the safety management systems in small and large operations, and especially when you implement feedback mechanisms. You've heard of ATSAP for controllers. We have ASAP programs. These are safety action programs. We had the oldest of the programs, ASRS, which was a NASA feedback system where people were allowed to talk about incidents that happen. And when you look at the curve of those, there's a reluctance that nobody will use it for a while. Then everybody is compelled to use it every day. And then it settles into a system of very steady stream updating. And the interesting part is when you take all of this curve that has gone on that I just described and track below it on a sub-chart, track below it the incidents that have happened and watch them fall off. That's all you have to do. A picture is worth 1,000 words, and in this case, two pictures, these two graphs, and when you see how they relate to each other and how they complement each other, you'll shake your head and say, I don't know why everybody doesn't do this. We should have done it years ago. So anyway, my appeal to you is don't be reluctant to adopt these systems. They're not complicated. You can do it at the most basic level. The larger you get, the more sophisticated you get, but the bigger the reward gets and the bigger the safety benefit for all of us becomes. So with that, I hope I've given you a little bit of an insight. One of the things that I thought with a group like this, it's quite diverse. I know you do a lot of different things. I thought perhaps we could leave a little time to be conversational. I come in and have some ideas of what you might want to be interested in and therefore put those components. But I would like to close by saying thank you very much. You have been wonderful partners with the FAA. You have been great supporters of this great industry, and I appreciate your interest, the fact that you are here with the AEA or supporting and working with them. Really gives me confidence that we have a good partnership. We all appreciate the value of collaboration, and I appreciate your personal and collective efforts to make this industry as good as it is and as safe as it is. It's the safest in the world. And it's because of the efforts of folks like yourselves, and I thank you truly from the bottom of my heart. So many thanks to you, and I wish you all the best with your conference as well.
In part three tomorrow, FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt fields questions from attendees at AEA 2010. The FAA's website is found at faa.gov. Learn more about the Aircraft Electronics Association at aea.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.